From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. With more summer-like weather on the way, more people will be out on area rivers. The cities of La Crosse and Onalaska are in the process of figuring out how to develop future sites around the Mississippi and Black Rivers. I found out where these improvements stand with La Crosse Planning Director Larry Kirch and Onalaska Land Use and Development Director Jason Gilman. Jason starts us out with an update on waterfront projects in Onalaska.
Well, the master plan was adopted by the Common Council in 2008, and it was really derived from the 1994 comprehensive plan for the whole city. And it just recognized that our downtown was a very important part of the community. It conveys an image and our character. There were blighted lands down there that we wanted to reverse and create a better economic opportunity. And the master plan set out a 20-year vision to improve that area, capitalizing on the geographic location of the central business district with the waterfront. I think from a regional standpoint, we wanted to make sure that Onalaska's downtown was a good example of how this region cares for itself, so it's a stewardship project. The Scenic Byways facility is one of many elements that we decided to insert sort of strategic public investment into that area to create a catalyst for private investment. And that was really derived from the tourism center being torn down in 2005 or 6 or so, and then our desire to relocate that into the downtown. And there are three components to that Scenic Byway Center: the Great River Road Visitor Center, which would be for our tourism center. Jean Lundy, our director there, advertises things to do on the Upper Mississippi River in the La Crosse region. And then our trailhead for the Great River State Bicycle Trail, which runs right into the facility from the north. And the Archaeological Interpretive Center, which is something that we wanted to showcase the intense amount of archaeological material that comes from the region and Onalaska.
And then another part of the Onalaska Waterfront Master Plan is private development. Can you talk about maybe some of the projects that you have in mind, if there are any in mind yet?
Sure. The master plan, is promoting urban mixed-use development, which really is more of your downtown type of development. You can contrast that with suburban development, which is typically single-story and large parking lots. I mean, we're really looking for more investment per square foot, if you can think of it that way. Good architecture, because it advertises our community. It's the central and heart of the city. The private investment that was suggested in the master plan is things that capitalize on the tourism industry because of the visitors on the Great River Road and the amount of people that travel that scenic byway. But also things that would benefit our downtown and not necessarily compete with the city of La Crosse, too. We had discussions early on in the process with La Crosse about what their strategy was for their downtown with large office uses and things like that. We're really not looking so much at office uses as we are at higher density housing and retail and tourism type businesses and things like that.
And you're also looking at putting in an Onalaska public market. And you were telling me one of the draws is to get more local producers selling their products in Onalaska.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons or motivations to try to get a market downtown. One, of course, is related to just food systems planning and the health of the community, providing locally grown produce and healthy foods to our densest neighborhoods and the densest part of the population in the community. We really don't have a grocery store downtown anymore. There are some convenience stores and things like that, but we'd like to have more access to those types of foods. But we also recognize that people traveling the Great River Road might want a taste of the region or something indigenous to the area, so they could have access to smoked fish and cheese and things like that that would benefit their or enhance their stay.
And the other part of this project is waterfront improvements. And you said that this is something that maybe you'll be looking at a couple years from now, but it is part of the master plan.
Right. One of the things that is very important about the plan is that it is a long-range plan, and you know, with especially with the city budgets the way they are, the city's been very careful about how it's implemented the plan, and it takes time to create an implementation strategy and funding strategy that is predictable and very well thought out. So the last part of the plan is really the implementation of waterfront improvements, and we're looking at that as a 2013 and beyond series of projects that we're going to be looking for creative funding strategies and ways to implement that. And the reason it's 2013 and beyond is because we have the state Highway 35 reconstruction and streetscaping in 2012. We have got the new tourism center being built in 2013. So we've got a lot of things happening in the next couple of years that'll consume our attention.
And Larry Kirch, there's a handful of projects going on in La Crosse as far as waterfront development goes too. Can you first start by talking about what's been going on with the Port of La Crosse Harbor and Waterfront Plan? I know you've been involved in the County Joint Board of Harbor Commissioners meeting. There have been meetings, and just where is that standing right now?
The city and county jointly staffed what's called the Joint Board of Harbor Commissioners, and they merged the city and county harbor commissions about 3 years ago. So we hired a firm out of Madison to assist the Joint Board with a harbor and waterfront master plan. And again, there's two components. One is the port of La Crosse itself, just the commercial nature of the port, the grain terminal, those types of things, bringing in commercial commodities. The waterfront component stretches the entire length of the county, so it includes everything in Pool 7 up in Bryce Prairie and all that. On Alaska's waterfront, we've incorporated what Jason was just mentioning into this document, as well as through the city of La Crosse, town of Campbell, et cetera. That project stands. We had the last public informational meeting April 20th, and the consultant now is in essentially finalizing the document. We still have to take it back through a technical resource committee, a steering committee, the Joint Board of Harbor Commissioners, and then it goes on to the City Council and the County Board of Supervisors, probably in July.
So what is the vision that you have for the Port of La Crosse and maybe even the entire La Crosse County development? What would you like to see in the next 10, 15, 50 years?
Well, it's not necessarily what I'd like to see. It's what the public told us they'd like to see, and that's really the nature of all planning processes, is what do the stakeholders say? What are the folks that earn a living here, they live here, they've grown up on the river, what do they see as the future? So that's really what the process was all about, listening to the public. Essentially, what it showed was, to the extent that we can, an interconnected waterfront between La Crosse and Onalaska, between La Crosse and Campbell, between Campbell and Onalaska. A lot of ideas in terms of trails, blue trails in terms of kayaking canoe trails, trying to make more of those. And so we have the La Crosse River. There's also canoe trails in Goose Island. But how do we interconnect all those? And there are also some major redevelopment sites as well, as was mentioned, the Barren Island site, obviously what Onalaska is doing with their waterfront, the Mobile Oil site. There's also some discussion in the town of Campbell about the reconstruction of the visitors or welcome center along I-90 and what that could look like and how could that be opened up to not just travelers along I-90 but area residents. So there's a lot of ideas of, but it all really kind of interconnects in terms of the waterfront component. The harbor component or the port component, the port has basically stabilized with the economy, and there's a lot more current capacity in the port to accommodate more barge traffic and things like that. So there's not really an expansion of the port per se, but the plan does allow for some ideas of where the port could expand.
And can you talk about where development with the Mobile Oil site is and stands?
It started about 30-plus years ago to acquire, the city acquired some railroad property really from Causeway Boulevard all the way south to Cass Street. So the city did own a little chunk in there. Last year, the city purchased the Petros property, which is about 11 or 12 acres along the Black River. It's fairly contaminated. And so what we're in the process of doing now is applying for some DNR grants to help with the cleanup. So there's two, actually we have to submit three grants, two for the Petros Railroad property and one for the Mobile Oil property. So we're trying to do the cleanup first because a private developer or even the public, a lot of the property will be used for kind of what the concept that Unalaska has is a public waterfront, just like an extension of Riverside Park. There's several acres of wetlands. It's in the floodway, so a lot of it can't be developed. We have also drafted a request for proposals to do what's called a charrette, following this national model that would be a six-day intensive planning process. That is really, it's drafted, it's just waiting to be finalized because we're concentrating on applying for these DNR grants right now. So I still think it will be several years before anybody sees a development over there. It may be this time next year before we actually do the charrette process.
It's not a quick cleanup.
It's not a quick cleanup. There are PCBs, there's lead, there's arsenic, there's petroleum contaminants. Mobile oil is all petroleum, whereas the Petros property was a scrapyard, and so there's lead, I think, is probably the worst hazardous issue over there. There's a little bit of PCBs, but not much.
And Barron Island, where's that project standing right now? I think you said that was a more of a county issue.
But... Well, the county had asked us a couple years ago, the Redevelopment Authority, anyway, the City Redevelopment Authority, to assist the county in trying to get the project moving along because the hotel's been gone for 4 or 5 years now. The county, we helped them with an RFP process. We had one developer that kind of got strung out a long time. The economy hit. The county recently has been trying to do some joint marketing. I believe the county sent out an RFP, and I don't think they got any responses. So it's the economy is just so flat that there really aren't lenders that will do a project, and there aren't developers. They know what the lenders are doing, so no one's really moving. It's a 12-acre parcel. It's a beautiful site adjacent to about 70 acres of Pettibone Park. To do downtown revitalization, to enhance the waterfront, to do projects like, you either have to hit the timing very correctly, but they're usually once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, and so there shouldn't be a rush. We should just take our time and do it right, and in the end, the best development will happen. I think that's the same message, really, for Barron Island or Mobile. You could always turn around and sell these really quick. In the past, we had an opportunity for a car dealership on the Mobile Oil site. It probably would have been a big mistake to have a 7-acre parking lot over there and a auto dealer as opposed to something really magnificent.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guest today is Larry Kirch, La Crosse's Director of Planning, and Jason Gilman, Onalaska's Land Use and Development Director. They're here talking about waterfront development in both the cities. I'm wondering if, Jason, you can talk about the collaboration between Onalaska and La Crosse. How have you both worked together in the waterfront development plans?
Well, I guess I would point to a variety of different areas that we work regionally. One is our transportation, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, where we look at connections between the communities with regard to transportation, whether it's transit or bicycles and pedestrians or automobiles. But we also look at our downtowns and share our planning documents with each other and talk about strategies. I think that's something that we've had our eye on. There's some wonderful things that have occurred in downtown La Crosse and a great legacy that's being left for future generations. And we want to complement, the good things that are happening in the region. As Larry said, it does take a lot of time and patience, but in the end, what you leave the future generations is very important, and that's part of the stewardship aspect of this. I'd also say that Larry touched on the Blue Way concept, and historically, our riverfronts were very similar because they were heavy industry, rail yards, sawmills, this type of thing, which drove the early economies of our communities. Now they're being transformed into redevelopment areas, but nature-based recreation and enhancing people's quality of life by giving them that connection with nature and offering more activities and more access. And I think that's where we're on the same page with the planning work that's going through with the Harbor Commission.
And Larry, I want to ask you, how do you in La Crosse balance tourism with commercial development?
Well, tourism is a huge component of our local economy here. I think the natural beauty of the area is really what historically has, we talk about God's country and the Coulee region and all that. I think that's what attracts tourists. I think there's always a fine balance. You don't want to love a place to death. And so I think what this port and waterfront plan does is respect that this is a beautiful area. We have a lot, as was alluded to earlier, to leave to future generations. So you don't redevelop a city or take a waterfront and do it at the expense of the environment, that economic growth and the environment can go hand in hand. And I think that's and tourism, again, it helps the local economy, but at the same time, you don't want to do it to the point where things get overly commercialized and it's just you kind of lose that sense of place. And I've seen a lot of places that have just been loved to death that you can't even get there anymore because they were beautiful at one time, and they still are, but everybody's enjoying them to the point that it kind of spoils the place. I don't ever want this place to get that way.
Jason?
Yeah, we were cautioned. One of the early participants in one of the citizen workshops that we had mentioned that very thing, that you don't want to create a white elephant or a situation that is disconnected from your community that tips the scale too heavy in one way where the local citizenry and public don't feel welcome in their own downtown. So you have to really create a careful balance between the tourism industry and the local economic development and preserving the character of your community. And you know, we're hiring specialists like the Cabal Washotko Architect Group to help us with that on the new tourism center. I mean, they're going to be challenged with respecting our history and our culture, with creating an iconic piece of architecture that'll hopefully be attractive to tourists and enhance our local economy. So it is a very important part of our economy, but one that we have to give very careful thought to.
And I know there are pretty strict laws in both of the cities as far as waterfront development goes. Can you talk about those laws and maybe how these projects can work around them or work with them?
Well, in the city, I think we're both the same. I mean, we have the wetland regulations that are really state-mandated ordinances on shorelands and wetlands. There are state permits needed for grading and erosion control adjacent to riverbanks. For example, the Mobile Petros property, there's 3 acres of wetlands there that we just really can't touch. And so we need to enhance them because they have been degraded. But we're working with nature. I think that's the idea that has evolved over the last 30 years is that, again, one of the famous planners, Ian McCargue, design with nature, not try to force nature against its will. So I think recognizing that environmental stewardship goes a long way to make the site even more valuable for the people that live here and want to enjoy the waterfront.
We have the same issues, west of the Burlington Northern Railroad tracks, which is the 47-acre parcel that the city acquired in June of 2006, is largely floodplain. And we hear from the public rumors that, you know, we're going to develop or allow development in that area, and that's not the master plan. In fact, the citizens, when we held the workshops and did the planning exercises with the citizens, they recognize the importance of the environment and how that is so attractive to people, and to compromise that compromises one of the very things that could drive better economics and quality of life and things like that in our community. So we're very cautious about that, preserving that and creating a good balance between improvements and development and preserving the natural environment. And I think that one of the areas or challenges that we're going to face is in the Wittenberg Marsh. It's a spectacular urban marshland that has habitat for species of concern and bald eagles nesting and an immense amount of waterfowl. And how do you gain access to that visually without compromising it? And that's something that we'll face in the next 5 years.
Both of your waterfronts have gone through a number of changes throughout the modern development within both of the cities. And I'm wondering, is it a coincidence that you're both looking at these two major projects right now? Is there constantly going to be development on the waterfront?
I think it's going to be constant. I mentioned it, this being a stewardship project. I don't think it's a, you know, your downtown is not an area that you can let your guard down because blight and you know, things like vandalism and even crime and vacant buildings and things can creep in if you're not good stewards of that area. So we want to make sure that that area continues to be on our radar screen as a priority area for public improvement and the attraction of new investment. Onalaska's plan started in 2008, and even though we've got a couple of major projects that are funded and coming, we've got a long way to go. And this is a project that will probably, it's been in place for three administrations over 15 years. And it'll probably, you know, be in place for the next three administrations and even beyond that.
Yeah, I would say La Crosse has probably started after the 65 flood and then in earnest when that whole, what, again, perhaps maybe should have been saved, this whole warehouse district that is now the La Crosse Center and the Radisson and the old Heilemann Corporate Center. Again, those are great additions, but you also wonder what La Crosse would have been if we hadn't, if we had done a little bit better job of historic preservation. In terms of the waterfront aspect, again, it's constantly evolving. Right now the Park Department is doing a lot of work along with the Planning Department. We're building a bike trail along Isle of Plume that's going to connect really from Market Street over to Gunderson Lutheran through Isle of Plume over to the Green Island Ice Arena. We have that new bridge, which has already been graffitied, by the way, so we have to take that off. To connect, really, and I talked to somebody the other day that works at Dairyland Power. They live downtown, and they now bicycle to Dairyland Power on the south side by using that waterfront trail. The original park plan for La Crosse was done, I think, in around 1908. John Nolan developed a plan for Riverside Park. The park board was created in 1911. So I just view what we're doing as really being stewards of that early planning work. So that's preserving the kind of the character, the integrity of Riverside Park. We've rebuilt the levee so the riverboats could dock. Really, I think John Nolan hopefully would appreciate what we're doing today on the waterfront that was created. So, again, public access to the waterfront is critical. We heard that loud and clear when the Riverside Center buildings were built. We bought out Piggies and relocated Chris Roderick and Piggies, and we relocated the what was called the Schultz Distributing and also Cargill. And all of that, some people felt all that waterfront should have been public. But what we maintained was enough of a riverwalk area and still try to get the economic return on the waterfront as well.
La Crosse City Planner Larry Kirch and Onalaska Land Use and Development Director Jason Gilman talking with me about waterfront development. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Strube, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our staff and producers. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.